And we have a fabulous class led by Elaine DuVos, a member of our faculty for many years, principal oboist to the Metropolitan Opera. That is Saturday coming up at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. It's a brilliant class, really worthwhile. But today we're talking about three different events that will be coming up also in the same week. First, I will mention Augustin Haderlich, who will be giving the final recital program in our Mercedes Bass concert series next Sunday. And we'll actually be talking with Augustin last today, but he's with us live. And Damari McGill, a principal flutist of the Seattle Symphony, who has created a really wonderful masterclass with flute students. And that is going to be this Thursday at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. And then Patrick Summers, who is music director of the Houston Grand Opera, a longtime faculty member with us in Aspen, newly co-director of our Aspen Opera Theater. And Patrick with Renee Fleming, who is his co-director, will be giving a class on Wednesday of this week at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. And that's where we're going to begin. So Patrick, I see you. You are in Houston, I think.
I am. Hi, Alan. Thank you. And hello, everyone. That discovery of words and music and your relationship to words and music is so important. So important for when you're auditioning to audition with music that you love. It sounds like a very simplistic thing, but very often we hear young singers in auditions singing music that not so much that it isn't appropriate to them, but it doesn't speak to them yet, or they don't get it yet. And so it's important to really have that connection to the music that you sing. But you are right. I mean, singers, you know, instrumentalists can start at age 3 or 4, and they do often. Singers can't do that. Mm-hmm. And singing is a life force in a way. It's dependent on your body and your body's growth, and everyone grows differently. And so there's a tremendous amount of a journey to oneself as a singer that other musicians don't have as much. All musicians have that. Being an artist is that constant journey. But with singing, it's unique. It is unique. And sometimes the best the person who seems most poised at age 22 to take on the world is not necessarily the person who has the 30, 40 year career in them. They may be really good at getting the job or winning the competition or very good at auditioning, but having something under the surface of that is what makes you an artist. And that's very much what we were wanting to focus on. And I know what we will focus on next year is artistry and craft and technique. And, you know, part of being good at auditioning is having something under the surface, but part of being good at hearing auditions also is knowing what to look for. And what in that 22-year-old that's still nascent may last a 30, 40 year career. Those are the artists we want to promote. You know, there are artists who can only climb mountains. They can't do hills. It's a good good Aspen reference. You know, you put hills in front of them and they don't go anywhere. So you have to put Mount Everest in front of them sometimes. And Renee, I'd love to hear Renee's answer to that, because she was very much like that. She was always challenging herself with the hardest possible thing. You know, she never took an easy route when she could, you know, go over Independence Pass. I'm beating that metaphor to death, but there are artists like that. Renee is one of them. She's still doing it. But I'd love to hear her answer to that when she gets on the call.
You know, one of the most charming things, if I may say, about Renee, because the list of charming things about Renee would go endlessly, but is when she says to a singer, "This was always so hard for me. Mm-hmm. And here's what I learned to do to get over this difficulty, which is inherent in this particular aria or this role."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, that is technique. That is an artist's discipline, and that's an artist's technique. And we inherently understand, I think, that a pianist or a violinist or any instrumentalist has to study technique. I mean, you can't play one of the Mozart flute concertos if you don't have the technique to do so, no matter how musical you may be. And that is also true of singers. And singing is a technique, acting is a technique. And the building of that technique is so important. And you know, what I recall of the young singer, Renee, and it's still true, is this absolutely blazing technique, and you don't notice it. You don't notice the work. It's all, the effect is all effortless, and technique is supposed to be invisible. And so that's an extraordinary thing for the young singers of the Aspen Festival to be exposed to in her. I want to see them in character. And if not in character, I want to see them have a deep connection to the words and music. So I look for in auditions, I love for them to bring repertoire that almost stumps me, or, you know, that I haven't heard in years, or that, wow, where did they find that? I love that. So that my concentration is on the artist. And not necessarily if, you know, they sing it like a famous singer did, you know. So I think being in character is very important. I remember a couple of auditions where a soprano sang De Vieni Non Tardar from the fourth act of The Marriage of Figaro. And they made it clear that they were singing to Figaro, you know, even though Figaro wasn't there. And they did that in very subtle ways, but it was so beautiful. And I still remember it, you know, and it was in an audition situation. So I think it's important to be in character.
So a different aspect of classes I've heard both you and Renee give is when a singer is singing in a very striking, successful way, and yet one might say, what does that have to do with the character here? What does that have to do with this moment? Yeah. So you're singing with tremendous strength, but is that the right thing?
Well, are they in an audition persona where they're playing a singer singing, or are they playing a character? And that is something that we will constantly work on and give young artists the courage to go out there and be filled up by a composer's creation. That's what acting is. You know, acting at its most exalted is simply just being fully in the presence of who you are, being in yourself, in another's creation. That's what acting is, and so that's what we're looking for. That kind of artistic truth. You know, our job is preparation, and we have to study and get all this. We have to take in everything we can. But then when the performance starts, our job as artists is to study and gain technique. But our job as performers is to go out there empty and be vulnerable enough to let the music, the creation that we're dealing with, fill us back up. And that's what other people witness in a performance. And that's really hard. It's hard to go out there and not think, I know all of this. Well, that's not what the performance is for.
Well, that is all so great to hear. I want to mention that the class Patrick Summers and Renee Fleming are giving is this Wednesday at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. And we'll also be on our website through the end of our season, so available. And we're so grateful to you, Patrick, for accepting the role as co-artistic director of opera in Aspen.
Oh, thank
and
you.
For being with us. But we're now delighted to turn to a member of our faculty, Damari McGill. Damari, I'm not going to give his whole bio, but a brilliant flutist, now principal of the Seattle Symphony. Damari's class is going to be this Thursday, at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. And Damari, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to see you.
So my first thought for you is very abstract, but it's I did have a chance to see some of what you were doing with the students. And something that is in common with every single great teacher we have had in this whole season, we've been trying to draw a curtain open a little bit this season and let the public see what really happens behind the scenes between teacher and student. And something you talk about very much is pulse and rhythm. And almost every great teacher I've ever known, that's an essence of what they do. So what would you say about that?
Yeah, it's, to me, it's the number one, the most important thing in music making. There's two things in general that I focus on, and that's discipline and spirit, energy. And the whole thing about pulse is that it represents both of those things. It represents discipline, of course, and it also represents energy. And I'm a strong believer in that. I guess spirit without discipline can be reckless. And on the other hand, discipline without spirit can be pointless.
There's some saying like luck favors those who are prepared.
Oh, it's so true. So true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Damari McGill, we're so glad that you are on our faculty and with us, principal flute of the Seattle Symphony. Damari's class is this Thursday at 5 p.m. and will be available on our YouTube channel and our website after that as well. So thank you so much, Damari.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. Great. Take care.
So we turn now to Augustin Hadlich. Augustin is, of course, a favorite in Aspen for many years, certainly one of the great performing musicians in the world. And Augustin will be our final soloist in our Sunday concert series this summer. He would have been with us live if that had been possible. But he has done something quite extraordinary. In that, as some of us knew, but not everybody knew, he's a fabulous pianist. And so a question in these days with, say, accompanied sonatas is, what are you going to do? Are you going to have the pianist come into the studio with you? How are you going to do that? And Augustin has recorded his own piano parts for his own violin parts. So tell us about that.
Well, it started just with an experiment because at some point at the end of March, of course, all the concerts were canceled. I was sitting around. I was playing a lot of solo violin music and, of course, a lot of Bach. But I was really missing the sound of another instrument and playing with another person. And out of the blue one day, because I have this electric piano somewhere behind me, and where you can record, you can play on the piano and record it. Out of the blue, I just did Rachmaninoff vocalese and recorded the piano parts and then played the violin to that recording. And I discovered that it was possible and it was actually very interesting. It made me aware over the months, I've done a lot of different pieces this way, and it made me aware of a lot of the subtleties of timing and all the little things one would normally do, like without even talking about it with another musician. We communicate just subconsciously, the way that we breathe, the way that the kind of shape you give a phrase gives away the timing that it's going to have at the end. And all these little things, which are so hard when performances are socially distanced. This incredible difficulty that everyone's now found out about as they were trying to collaborate virtually, that it's so hard to replicate that when you're not in the same room together. And so interestingly, I found, because I'm also the one who's going to play the other part, that I know how I want to play the violin part, so I was actually able to anticipate certain things, and it made me, I think, self-aware in a new way, and I started to really enjoy the process. Although for this recital for Aspen, it's the vocalese is also part of it, which I think works beautifully this way, and then it ends with Sarasate Carmen Fantasy, and so that's a real challenge because sometimes the piano is playing by itself, but sometimes the violin plays by itself, so that's when it kind of becomes also an like a video editing challenge to fit everything together. Yeah.
And so did you do the editing as well, or someone has done that with you?
I actually did. I've learned a lot over the last, I guess it's been almost 6 months, which is crazy. I've learned a lot about that and got gradually better at it. And I found actually, in a way, it was easier if I did it myself because I knew how I had played the parts and where the tricky issues are in the piece in terms of synchronizing. Mm-hmm. It's funny because it's a lot of things that if you were just in the same room with a musician, you would do it once. And even when you play it the second time, all those little issues are already fixed because you just do it automatically, just listening to each other. But when you're only hearing the other part a few hours later after you've recorded it and now you're doing the other part, that's becomes much harder. So it requires a certain amount of kind of preparation, planning, and occasionally you have to do something again if it just doesn't work, if the tempo didn't feel right once you played the other instrument. And but it's it can I do like a challenge, and I do kind of like it's very playful. It feels playful because when it then occasionally can also feel frustrating, but it mostly feels very playful, and also discovering maybe in a deeper way the other part, the piano parts. And I mean, in general, I'm a big believer in always listening very, very closely and like empathizing with the other parts. I think this is a big challenge for violinists because we often get the melody, we often get the top line, and it's easy for violinists to get into the habit of mainly paying attention to the top line and not really listening all the way down to everything else that's going on. But of course, composers generally write the other way around. It's kind of built from the bottom up. And I believe even in a showpiece like Sarasate's Carmen Fantasy, which of course is completely like a violinist show, even in a piece like this, you're always reacting to rhythms in the piano. And there's a beautiful moment when the habanera, in the habanera movement, when the theme is played in canon. And so then you know, oftentimes you hear it that the violinist just decides all the nice timings and the pianist has to kind of fit in. But in this case, I was kind of going back and forth, trying to find a timing that's flirtatious for both the piano part and the violin part, you know, and was sort of, I have to consider both sides so that I don't get angry at myself when I play the piano part at, you know, what I was doing on the violin part. So
I love that. You know, we have been fortunate in our Sunday series this summer that Enon Barnaton and Alyssa Wallerstein and Andrew Armstrong and James Ennis were both able to be together.
Yeah.
And actually Michelle DeYoung and Fema Bronfman were together. So they were having that give and take in the live experience. I learned that some artists with accompanied works, the pianist sets up the track and then the other person goes over it. But some artists say, no, I will record my track and the pianist can react to it.
Yes.
So you have chosen the perfect bridge in between.
I do both. So actually in the Sarasate, most of it is recorded violin first, but the vocalese I recorded piano first. I think that sometimes there are pieces where, for violin and piano, where the piano is in charge of the timing of the flow, and hearing that piano part is inspiring. You hear all the harmonies and all these inflections, and this beautiful turns that the harmonies takes, it inspires you when you play the violin part much more than if you just played your own line. So that's the way I did it for that piece. And well, I mean, it was, of course, when all this first started, there was a period when really, like, you couldn't get together with anyone, you know, just even, and everyone was so scared. And so that's how this first started. A few months later, it started to be possible to occasionally meet up with someone maybe to play. But in this case, I mean, I chose a program that was mostly solo violin work. So it starts with the third Partita by Bach, which I think is maybe the happiest of the Bach suites. I feel like it's such an uplifting piece. Mm. The six sonatas and partitas, they have this kind of overarching development that it gets incredibly dramatic in the middle, in the second partita, the Chaconne. It's kind of this huge struggle, and then it's this kind of resurrection towards the end. And I don't know, it gives me a lot of joy, the third partita. And then the second Isai sonata takes elements of that piece. At the very start, it actually quotes the third Bach partita, this really happy piece, but it becomes schizophrenic, kind of like it becomes very, very mad, the piece, and expressionist. And I was trying to figure out what he was trying to say. So Isai wrote his six sonatas partitas for other violinists, like he dedicated them to his colleagues. So this one was dedicated to Jacques Thibault. So what does it mean to dedicate a piece to your colleague that's where the first movement is called Obsession, the second one is called Malinconia, so it's like a depressive mood. The third one is Dance of the Shadows. The fourth one is called The Furies. And throughout the whole thing, you have the Dies Irae theme that kind of permeates it. So I don't know what he was trying to say to Jacques Thibault there, but...
Well, as a personal note, I had the lure from the E major partita at my wedding. So it's
beautiful, yeah.
Very happy thing, as you say. So you have the Bach Isai, and then vocalese of Rachmaninoff and Carmen Fantasy.
Well, before the Carmen Fantasy, we also I play a piece by Daniel Bernard Romain. It's a contemporary composer, African American composer, who wrote this piece called Filter. So it's quite a departure from the rest. It's in a way has also shows some influence of, when I say rock music, Jimi Hendrix, that kind of thing, but done on the violin. And the title refers to the kind of filter that on an electric guitar, you know, the engineer would. You know, turn the knob to distort the sound, and I create this with the position of the bow going closer to the bridge and back. And it's a really high energy, very fun piece that I learned recently. And then we move on to Carmen Fantasy, which of course is always delightful. The themes by Bizet are just so wonderful, and whenever I play this piece, I find myself wanting to play it more like, wanting to sound it more like the opera than the violin show piece. So sometimes when Sarasate does very violinistic things, I'm tempted to kind of go back more towards the Bizet original. And I was watching videos of singers sing the various arias of Carmen. I find that really inspiring. It's such a great piece. So it was very interesting to hear this whole conversation about opera singing earlier. Mm-hmm.
And so what, you're in New York now, I think. What is happening for you these days?
Well, I live in Connecticut actually now. And I've been just at home doing some concerts happened virtually. In the fall, it looks like there are some concerts that will happen, particularly in Europe, so I might spend some time there. But one big challenge that is coming up is that whenever you go from one country to another, you might have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And of course, schedules used to be planned, you know, 2 years in advance, and were generally planned that, you know, you spend 1 week here, 1 week there, and going, zipping across the the globe, and that really doesn't work if you every time you're asked to spend 2 weeks just to prove that you're healthy. So that's complicated. So I might spend a good portion of the fall in Europe, because there are some concerts that are happening just with kind of socially distanced seating in the audience, reduced orchestras. And I've been working on a recording of the Bach sonatas and partitas. I mean, this was partially also why I chose it for this program, but this was maybe the first music that I turned to when it was such a it was really such a shock when all this started. And this is music that I think gives great comfort. And it's kind of the Bible for violinists, because it in many ways also is kind of like the foundation of our technique and what we do on the instrument. And it's just like a never ending source of inspiration. So that's, has also been really uplifting to spend a lot of time on all the Bach.
Now, I've certainly found our audience is in touch with me all the time, that there is such consolation in staying connected to these works. And that's something that all of you artists are giving us, so we're grateful about that. On a practical note, we had Alisa Mahlerstein a few weeks ago, and she went to play with the Elbphilharmonie, but she had to quarantine for two weeks, so she had to give all that time to that project.
Yeah, it becomes like a puzzle, like looking at your calendar and always counting back 2 weeks. 2 weeks turns out to be a long time. And so then sometimes you realize, oh, well, if I play this concert, then I can't play this concert because of the 2 week period. And it's kind of crazy. And then of course there are things that you can't, that you just can't predict, you know, maybe then you plan on this quarantine. What if there's another surge of the pandemic in that country? Then maybe, you know, it won't happen anyway. So there's just more uncertainty than I've ever seen. It's kind of, I mean, in a way, I mean, if we're going to look at the silver lining, I think there's a certain spontaneity that I think musicians in a lot of places kind of wake up and spend their time with music, whatever they feel like that day. You kind of have this, it's a kind of freedom maybe that you wouldn't normally have when you're used to your schedule being set 2 years in advance and you just everything, you know, what you were going to do. So maybe there are bright sides to it, but it's certainly, certainly a very difficult time. For sure, for everyone.
Well, we are so grateful to you that you are part of our season and with this gorgeous program. And grateful also to Damari McGill, who was with us, and Patrick Summers. So just to review for the audience, Patrick Summers and Renee Fleming, a class on Wednesday this week at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. Damari McGill, a class with flutists at Thursday at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. Elaine Duvas is this Saturday at 5 p.m. Andreas Hefliger with a just completely stupendous Beethoven Hammer Clavier Sonata, rebroadcast Tuesday at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. And Augustin Hadlich on Sunday, 3 p.m. Mountain Time. And we're so grateful to all of you artists for being with us. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to see you.